Over the summer, MIT released this report that supposedly concluded that 95% of all the AI pilots out there are failing. And for a couple of weeks after that, that was all you could hear about, all anybody was talking about. And it's still a stat that's getting cited pretty much constantly. I'm going to call it now that this is going to become one of those things that is just going to persist forever, like the 70% of all transformations fail one that is still getting thrown around. I'm pretty sure it originally came from the Harvard Business Review, but most people don't even bother to cite the source anymore. We just say it like it's true and we all accept it now. But, you know, questionable sourcing aside, the frenzy over this MIT report has really got me thinking about pilots in general and why we're so obsessed over their success or failure. Why do we care so much about how other people's projects are turning out? And if a pilot's supposed failure can teach us crucial lessons that would allow us to iterate successfully toward better outcomes, isn't that actually a win? So I think it's time to reframe our understanding of what it means to pilot something, whether that is a framework like Agile, a new technology like AI, or maybe a piece of MarTech. So let's clear this episode for takeoff. Welcome to the Agile Marketing Edge, the first podcast dedicated to turning Agile theory into real-world marketing breakthroughs. I'm Andrea Freyrier, CEO of Agile Sherpas, and your guide on this climb to smarter, faster, outcome-driven marketing. Every week, we unpack the what, who, and how behind Agile marketing, from building high-velocity workflows and slashing waste to measuring what really matters and scaling success across teams. You'll hear quick hit strategies you can deploy today, plus candid stories from marketers who have traded chaos for clarity and never looked back. Hit follow wherever you listen, and let's carve the next switchback together. So this whole pilot uproar after the MIT report reminds me of a Sex and the City quote when Carrie says that it's amazing how upset women can get over the marital status of strangers. So we can rephrase that slightly to say that it's amazing how fixated white-collar workers can get over the pilot status of strangers. And I don't want to imply that I'm completely above all of this, because when the MIT study came out, I was referencing it. And I will continue to reference it because the numbers are just so flashy and easy to understand. They make the point about the difficulty of getting AI right really well. So let me quote directly from the study so you can see how nice and clear it is. Despite 30 to 40 billion, that's a B, in enterprise investment into Gen AI, 95% of organizations are getting zero return. Just 5% of integrated AI pilots are extracting millions in value, while the vast majority remain stuck with no measurable P&L impact. It's punchy. It's clear. It's to the point. And it's the same thing if you go back just a couple of years and you look at non-AI transformation efforts. So we have Bain and Company, which did two surveys of 300 really big companies 10 years apart. So they did the surveys in 2013 and 2023, and they found both times that only 12% of those transformation initiatives either met or exceeded expectations. So in 2013, 38% of the transformation initiatives failed completely to deliver on their objectives. And then 50% settled for mediocrity. Just, it was okay. It wasn't that great. And then in 2023, we had 13% failed to deliver and 75% settled for mediocrity. Again, punchy, clear data. But in both cases, right? It's kind of depressing. Because if you're somebody who wants to drive change and transformation in your organization, these are the kind of stats that make you want to throw your hands up or throw in the towel or maybe just throw up. But if you're somebody who doesn't like change, these are the kind of stats that you're going to pull out in a meeting. They are the perfect ammunition to dig in your heels and really argue for the safety of the status quo. But there are two really important things that are lurking behind the scariness of the data that's in both of these reports. And of course, these are not the only scary reports. These are just two of the many that are out there. There are lots of ones that will tell you about how transformation efforts fail or how it's difficult to adopt AI. You can go on the internet and find lots of these. But in all of them, there are things lurking behind the scenes that we need to better understand. The thing is that everything, every single thing that impacts the success or failure of a pilot is controllable. It is within an organization's control. That's the first thing. Everything that impacts a pilot's success or failure is within your control. Second thing is, even a so-called failed pilot is an amazing teacher. And these two things are really, really, really important. Because when we put them together, they should tell us that there is literally no good reason not to try a pilot. So, the status of other people's pilots notwithstanding, we should not be afraid to try one. Because if you do it right, and note the if there, if you do it right, it's either going to work and be amazing and lead toward larger transformational outcomes, which is what we want, or you're going to learn a whole bunch of stuff, and then your next pilot, your next step down the transformational path will be even better. So let's go behind both of these even further. Let's unpack them both even more because we want to have all the ammunition possible to argue for the inevitability of pilots. We don't want to give power to the naysayers in the room who would point to these kind of reports and say these are arguments against change and evolution. All right. So first up, let's talk about the success and failure factors, right? Because I said how we control these, right? So let's talk about what they are. It turns out that those 12% of companies from the Bain report that met or exceeded expectations during their transformation efforts, shocker, they all have things in common. Not a shocker. And so Michael Mankins and Patrick Leader of Bain put those things that the groups had in common into six categories. And I'm going to fiddle with those categories just a little bit here because we're not talking necessarily in this podcast about organizational transformations, right? We're talking about transformations inside of a marketing team or marketing organization. So it's a little bit of a subset. So some of them apply one-to-one and it's a very clear connection, but there's a little bit of an adjustment that we need to make to some of the categories. So I'll do a little bit of translation here, but a lot of it is very much the same. So the first one, the first way that you can ensure the transformation is successful and the thing that all of the ones that, well, let me back up. Some of the ones who were successful in the Bain study was treating transformation as a continuous process. And this is the one that I don't need to modify at all. This one is absolutely true. For the marketing organizations that I have seen transform well, they don't approach it as a checkbox or a one and done kind of project that we're going to do this quarter and then it's over and we walk away. This is what work is now and is always going to be a continuous state of transformation. And approaching it this way is the best option that we have for setting ourselves up for success. And as we go through the other five here, you'll start to see how this kind of mindset is going to inform the other components and help make sure that they are in place and just set all the rest of them up for success. All right. And so then the second one is building it transformation into the company's operating rhythm. Didn't modify this one at all either, because I have seen a huge difference between the clients that we've worked with who have regular communications and regular integration of transformation efforts into their existing rhythms, and the ones who try to just keep it separate as a different thing. It's separate. It's over there, because someday it will be over. So we don't need to integrate it into the regular work that we're always going to be doing. This is temporary work. So there's no point in connecting the two, right? You can see how it's tightly integrated to this first one. If we think transformation is temporary or something that we just check off our list, we're not going to worry about building it into our regular operating rhythm. But if we think that transformation is continuous, then we will work hard to integrate it into the normal work that we are doing. And one of the groups that we worked with that I saw them do this so well was they had just a regular comms machine that talked about how the transformation effort was going every week. They had emails that went out. They had dedicated space at monthly town halls where the transformation team would report out on how things were going, their KPIs, what teams were going to be affected next, and representatives from the teams that had already gone through the transformation would share their experience. It was a thing of beauty. And that made everybody excited to be the next people to go through the transformation process. It made the whole thing seem real, tangible, and permanent. So building a transformation into just the normal rhythms of the company really, really helps. All right. Third, explicitly managing energy and resources. Not much to adjust here either. But this is one that I see marketing teams in particular getting wrong a lot. Because if we're doing this at an organizational level, which is what the Bain study was more about, then it's coming from a CEO directive. And so finding the budget for this, I don't know that it's easier, but at least you have a lot of weight behind the budgeting process. Whereas a marketing leader may have a little bit more difficulty pulling together a hefty budget for a transformation project. Even if transformation is going to be ongoing, it can be difficult to pull resources from revenue-generating activities to fund transformation activities. However, if you are serious about this, and you should be, then you need this to be funded with not just money, but also energy and human resources. This cannot be one poor person's side of desk project. You need it to have KPIs. Ideally, you have a transformation office or a transformation team. It needs to be clear that this is a priority, that it has high-level executive sponsorship, and that there is real energy behind it. This also really makes sure that there's not a single point of failure behind a transformation, so that if one person leaves, the whole thing doesn't collapse. This should not be a single-legged stool. There should be multiple legs here so that if somebody does leave, the effort can continue. Because again, if this is a continuous process that has been integrated into the rhythms and routines of the department, you don't want it to get ripped out now. And so we need to make sure that it's protected by having a team, by having it more integrated and insulated from any disruptions that could be caused by a single person leaving. And now this next one I think is really interesting. And I struggled with seeing how it might be as important as some of the other ones until I thought about the AI report from MIT. So this success factor is using aspirations and not just targets to set expectations about a transformation initiative. And I don't think we give this one enough credit because we think about business outcomes, right? And we think about what are we trying to accomplish with a transformation effort, right? A lot of times when we go in and do an agile transformation with the team, we're thinking about speed to market, productivity improvements, waste reduction. We're looking for improvements to the bottom line because that is what people want to see. They want to know the business benefits for changing their ways of working, and that's valid. But having some aspirational component to the transformation, not just targets. We need targets, but not just those to set expectations, was part of the successful organizations being successful. And so if we think back to the AI report, they were fixated on P&L impact. So maybe that's not all that success looks like in terms of adopting AI. Maybe we're missing some of the intangible benefits of modernizing teams, modernizing ways of working, of people feeling like they're innovative and on the cutting edge of work. That's important too. And maybe even if it's not driving value right on to the P&L, maybe it's still important. So things to think about. And it's important to note, you don't have to do all six of these things that we're talking about. And the Bain study was not saying that all six were necessary to be in the 12% who were finding success in their transformation efforts. The more you do, the more likely you are to find success. But all six were not required for success. So 3 and 4 of these are going to get you the highest likelihood, but don't feel like you need all of them. Okay, the next one, the next success factor is driving change from the middle out. And I could not be more in agreement with this one. Because what we have seen happen so many times in transforming marketing organizations is you get this frozen middle. And this is where transformations can stall so, so often. Because you have individual contributors who are excited about changing ways of working, especially in Agile, right? So Agile is all about team empowerment and autonomy. And for a lot of folks, it's about being more productive and being able to own their day and push back on interruptions and unplanned work. And that's such a good feeling. It's like a load coming off of their shoulders. They feel great. Right? And Agile is fun. They feel connected to their colleagues. They see alignment between their work and the organization. Again, so many good feelings, right? For the people really in the trenches doing the work. And then executive leaders love it because they get visibility into the work being done by the teams. They can talk more clearly about the activities. They can help remove non-value added work and waste from the system. They're often the ones sponsoring the transformation effort. And so they get to be the ones standing up during planning meetings or strategy meetings or board meetings and talking about how great this transformation is going and getting all of the pats on the back and the woohoos. But then you have kind of these middle managers who are bearing the brunt of when people are not happy about how the transformation is going, or they're scared, or they're worried for their jobs, or the tool isn't working, or they don't like the tool, or the executive is getting difficult questions from the board or their peers. They're coming to the managers, and the managers feel like their job is getting transformed away. And so bringing them into the effort early and having them drive it is the best way to make sure that it doesn't freeze there and that it doesn't stall out, because they can hold it hostage. They have a lot of power in making sure that it doesn't change if they don't want it to. So driving change from the middle out can be super powerful, whatever the change is, but it's certainly for a ways of working change like Agile. All right, last one of the six success factors for any change initiative, but especially Agile: budget for continuous transformation. So this is the one that I fiddled with the most, because in the Bain study, they're talking about an organization-wide transformation, which means that they were going out and getting tens of millions of dollars to fund this transformation effort. Not a thing that marketing leaders are generally going to be doing to fund a transformation. However, we do still need to be serious about the money that we are raising and budgeting for a transformation effort. You cannot announce some kind of transformation, whether it's Agile or AI or whatever the next thing is going to be, and say that this is mission critical and strategically important and we've got to all rally around it, and then turn to the team who you're asking to lead the transformation and say they have a $10,000 budget. You can't. It's not going to work. Especially if we go back to the first success factor, which is realizing that transformation is a continuous effort now. It's not going to be transformation is over after Q3, and so we no longer have to budget for it. Transformation is never not happening. It's just, what is the next phase? What is the next thing going to look like? And so just make it a permanent line item in your budget. It's not going away. And then you will be able to continue to educate, continue to evolve, and continue to be ready for whatever the next thing is, instead of being caught flat-footed and having to scramble for whenever the next version of whatever AI is coming and disrupting you. So budget for continuous transformation. Again, those were six success factors. You don't need all of them. Shoot for three or four, and then you will have a good shot at your transformation, your overall transformation, and especially your pilot working. And then coming back to the MIT report, it's also worth noting that the things that they pointed out as contributing to the failed pilots were things like brittle workflows, a lack of contextual learning, and misalignment with day-to-day operations. So to quote again directly from them, the core barrier to scaling is not infrastructure, regulation, or talent. It is learning. So again, all things that we control. So if we want our pilots and our transformations overall to succeed, we can make it happen. If you are in the struggling pilot category, it may be time to turn on some Taylor Swift and look in the mirror, because you might be the problem. All right. Speaking of learning, let's move on to the second part of the pilot conversation, which is, when a pilot is not successful, what can it teach us? So this really reminds me of when we work with clients and they need to adjust their team composition as part of an Agile transformation. So this happens a lot because marketing teams are often set up in functional groups or silos. So all of the designers are together, all of the email people are together, all of the marketing operations people are together, and so forth and so on, right? And it can be difficult for those folks to then try to work in an agile way because they're not set up cross-functionally. Over and over and over again, though, what happens to clients a lot is we get stalled out as they are trying to figure out what cross-functionality should look like for them. Because we only have 2 marketing ops people, but we need 5 cross-functional teams. And so they get stuck and we spin and we spin and we spin and we try and we diagram and we move and we talk and we discuss and we debate. And should we hire or should we this or should we that? Or can they be part-time on this team or that? And what should we do? And every time we just want to try. We just want to try. We just want to pilot. We just want to launch a team of some kind. Because while we know some best practices and we can give input on what's worked before, everybody's unique. Everybody's got unique humans because teams are made of humans and a little bit of AI now, but mostly humans. And so we cannot predict how it's going to go. There is no magic crystal ball that's going to tell us what's going to happen. We just have to try. But everybody, not everybody, a lot of people just get stalled out here. And so this is why thinking about piloting not as the first step on the path to perfection, but the first step on the path to learning can help us not be so afraid to start. Because this is what agile and agility is as well. It's not seeing how fast we can get to perfect, right? Agility is speed to learning. And pilots of any kind, agile pilots, AI pilots, whatever kind of pilot, they're nothing if not the incarnation of agile ways of working. It's like an MVP, a minimum viable product, minimum viable pilot. We can even just keep using the P. It's a quick way to test an idea, to see if we can deliver value in a new way. And the answer might be no. No, we cannot deliver value in the way we thought. And that's great because we learned in a controlled test environment, not by blowing up an entire department or organization. And I think this is part of the issue with these AI pilots in the MIT study. We've got these multi-million dollar investments. So maybe these are not pilots at all. Maybe we did not approach these with the proper MVP agile mindset at all. We were not trying to find ways where we could test and learn and iterate and roll these out incrementally. Instead, we started writing checks with like 7 zeros on them. And so, of course, when we started seeing things not going well, we're freaking out because this is not low risk failure, which is what real pilots are all about. So maybe in the case of the MIT study, maybe these are not failed AI pilots, so much as a case of the people who were setting these things up, not actually setting up a pilot in the first place. So, if you will forgive me a terrible pun, it's about time to bring this episode about pilots in for a landing. At this point, I hope that as we've talked about the success factors for a pilot, all of which we control, and the opportunity to learn from a pilot even when it fails, quote unquote fails, that you are coming around to the idea that no matter what happens, a pilot done properly is always worth doing. Because in that situation, there are only 2 possible outcomes. We win or we learn. But if you're struggling with what a good pilot might look like, the Agile Sherpas team of course, is here to help. We provide expert consulting guidance to marketing teams of all shapes and sizes, and you can learn more at agilesherpas.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Andrea Freyrier. Remember, the struggle is real, but so is agile marketing.